Hello to everyone. I'm going to recite and generate bodhicitta. May all sentient beings enjoy happiness and the causes of happiness. May they be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May they never be separated from the great happiness devoid of suffering. And may they dwell in the great equanimity that is free from attachment and aversion. Continue from yesterday. 66. No nature at all can be established, so it is inherently free of four extremes. Within that, no mind can be conceived, so be free of any thought of an apprehender. So this is same free from four extreme. This concept of it's important for understanding Dharma. Middle way school. Understanding middle way of teaching. It's often said four extreme is the, we can use different aspect of four, ex, beyond of four extreme. Four extreme is logic kind of a approach to assess, assert things. For example, exist, that is one assertion, we can say, and non-exist. Both exist and non-exist. Neither existence nor non-existence. This logic, approach is said in, Nagarjuna's Majjhimika Mula Majjhimika Karika, or Fundamental Roots of Middle Way. Root versus of a middle way, we can say. Is everything is real and is not real. Both real and not real. Neither real nor not real. This is a kind of a go beyond is taught by Buddha. This is Lord Buddha's teaching. For this, because our concept is often using these approach to analyze things. So go beyond the extreme of four extreme. One extreme is one is ex this is a real or exist. That kind of understanding is normal. Everything is real for us normally. And then through the not only appearance but we use analysis to scrutinize things, then we found there is a not intrinsic inherent existence of these appearances phenomena. That then we concluded is there is a no such a fundamentally existent things. But we cannot fall into nihilism thinking everything is denying the appearances, like we only emphasize the nature is not exist. Although that is a one truth, but that's not whole picture of the truth. And then we can say both exist and non-existent means like a quantum, let's say, particle and a wave duality. So it's a, although it's a real moving or staying or appearance to the same time it's empty, that kind of things in our normal understanding, then we think both exist because it's the same time real and unreal. Real and unreal is a conflict in most of people's mind, but if we say that is the truth, both exist, then we have the existence of emptiness or understanding about that concept in forming as a form, non-existent as a something exists kind of understanding. Then if we go say, it's that also wrong. Both other peers actually not really there. Also the empty of, you can empty itself. Emptiness, it's actually, it's a self also empty, nothing real. So in this, so we can go like real to unreal, both real and non-real, and neither real or non-real, that kind of approach. You can use the logical math or the to convert as a math language, that part. It's like confirming and negating, and it's both confirm and negation, and reject those both too. So confirmation, negation, both and neither, those is like a Buddha's, not Buddhist, but Nagarjuna's fundamental verses on the middle way. He said, everything is real and is not real. Both real and not real. Neither real nor not real. This is Lord Buddha's teaching. So these are the behind the good, important message, and said we do not assert emptiness. We do not assert non-emptiness. We assert neither both nor either. These are used only nominally. So, similar, like in these, in Nagarjuna's teaching, a lot of important message from these. I think, let's see. So some are a little bit complicated. We don't want to mingle in that part. So cause and the condition, I think these, if you more have more interested in about that part, you can continue to take a look the fundamental verses on the middle way. It's entering in the middle way, chapter 6, that's the Chantrakirti's explained. He's saying about how these, giving example as a chariot, that's car, it's like ancient horse pulled chariot. A chariot is not asserted to be different from its parts, nor is it non-different, nor does it possess them. It is not the parts, nor it is the owner of the parts. It is not the mere collection of them, nor is it their shape. So these are quite also famous verses. So anyway, we can use maybe more friendly language to understand this. He said before, as we mentioned, there is no intrinsic existence, and then that means, what that means, it's gone beyond of these limitations of two extreme or four extreme. Four extreme came from two extreme understanding of the exist or non-exist, real or unreal. That is kind of two extreme, or we can say two edges. Then from that came from four or eight extremes. Maybe four extreme, but eight, like non-real descriptions, something like that. So he said, within that, no mind can be conceived. So be free of any thought of any apprehender. Main purpose is we are hanging on or grasping these four extremes, then we have a ground or basic reason why we still have a grasping. We have attachment of any the phenomena. We have attachment based on reason. Our logic is based on these four extremes. If we say beyond no concept, beyond no, not free of perception, free of the thoughts. So it said you should bite in the non-grasp, non-attachment, or free of any thought of apprehender. That kind of subjectively, you can say, we retreat from all the assertion or this mind went to right, wrong, real, unreal. There is not that kind of what's it, dual thinking. And then the phenomena are all like dreams and illusions. There is no true things at all. Do not have too much fixation for things that appear through non-existence. So what the phenomena actually is, if you use the language or to describe it, then it said it's like dream, real, unreal, everything is possible. And illogical things also appears in the dream. Sometimes flying, sometimes in the dangerous situation, sometimes it's a very happy moment. Even if you don't dream anything, but the dream, sometimes mental state bring you joy, sometimes stress. And sometimes it's like you suddenly break from the reason and the logical patterns, trajectories. Then this is the nature of actually it's like that. Fundamentally, it's like that. Relatively, there is a clue where you can to follow or to reason things. So this is Buddhist kind of a whole general view that everything is mirage, dreamlike existence. If we roughly describe overall kind of situation. And then for these, there's no true things at all. That true thing means something to grab, something real, solid, independent things. Everything is interdependent, co-originated compound. Then we can see everything is identity, so-called identity is not solid, beyond of change, something like that. But it's relative things, or if everything is changing. So do not have too much fixation, too much grasping for things that appear through non-existence. It's said it's we have to accept things are have a generally we can say two aspects. One is the appearances and the reality of that. How appearances, it's not the whole picture of a phenomenon. What is actual reality is we attach to appearances, then we don't expect that behind that reality is very different, or we neglect, then when the appearances are changing, we don't really expect that kind of from his whole picture to understand that phenomenon which appears. It's like emotion appears, but we don't, we have a less understanding about what is behind of so many different emotions and thought. If you say we already have a very good understanding about the appearances and the pattern, trajectory, or we can say we have a analysis and data about that appearances. So through this experience, we know how to control or how to deal with it. That is a kind of a one way to learn from experience or scientific data or accumulation of experience, maybe a common experience to study psychology, these. But we are talking about here, reality, actuality is fundamentally the appearances based on reflections of our mind. I think we can say our mind have a different aspect of one thing is appearances. Another is the, what's called the reality or the now intrinsic existence. It's all mere just projection, reflections. So that part is a little bit not easy for people to kind of immediately understand. Then we trapped in different emotions. We don't detect, or we feel, sometimes fail to know what is the cause of that, so many patterns of different emotions. That is our self-attachment, grasping kind of a real something. Something is real, real. And if we investigate, then we know that is a kind of wrong perception. So for people who have a too much self-centered attitude, we can say relatively there is a method that is the training of compassion to reduce self-centered emotions. But we, if we lacking of understanding what is the reality, or what is appearance is the reality, that kind of a attitude or thinking, we have to use the, what's it called, the transcendental wisdom to the kind of transform the wrong projection or distorted projection through the wisdom. So they here emphasize we have to understand that appearance and its nature of emptiness. Understand of emptiness is very important, so can really break through or liberate yourself from the cycle of existence. And then 68, like causes and effect are effects, causes and effects in dreams, through not though not established in the actual nature. Karma and the results of the confused are unfolding. Give up misdeeds and strive at the virtue. So here he compromising, or you can say people, we still on the progress. Very important to emphasize that. That doesn't mean, if we say everything is like dream or illusion, doesn't mean that we can kind of do whatever we think want to do, well, there is a consequence in some relative phenomenon that we can see. You can, if you say, well, we plant seeds, and the seeds become tree, they are relying on so many causes and conditions, like basic elements or earth elements and nutritions or water, heat, moisture or space, and many kind of sunshine, or many things. So these we call, although fundamentally that is identitylessness, is reality, is like dream. But the relative phenomenon, because of a non-fixed identity, so everything is interdependent. Everything rely on each other, rely on many kind of cause and condition to exist and appear and disappear, all like become how the cause and the conditions work, working with a certain formation or forming. So in this set, we like cause and the effect in the dream, though not established in actual nature. It means cause and the conditions, if you use reason and logic, you can break in certain time, in certain aspect. You can say it's difficult to establish cause and the result as a fundamental truthness of their kind of existence. But relatively, we can see everything is dependent on the causality, causing the conditions and the result and these. So what the author here is saying, before we fully enlightened, we should really respect that cause and the conditions. That doesn't mean cause and the condition is the ultimate truth. It's a relative truth. In ultimate truth, you have to go beyond of the four extreme. In relative truth, you have to understand the complexness of cause and the resultant and the causality functions, how karma, action, and the causality really works. That is really big topic in these teachings. We don't have so much detail here, but it's a vast explanations in other texts. So for this, we should really still careful to about actions or about our kind of way of doing things, thinking and speaking. It's all matter of a accumulation of a karma, positive or negative karma. So we should always be careful of to accumulate or take the try to promote or generate virtuous deeds and try to void of non-virtuous actions and cultivate regret for your past misdeeds and from now on refrain from them, even if it should cost your life. Always strive at the antidote, the virtue of a refugee and bodhicitta. So here, author is more saying, because understand ultimate truth is very important, but the relative truth is we still hanging on the relative truth. Not totally weakened in the first Bhumi ground of a Bodhisattva. So in this level, it's very, very important to, let us say, purify our mind. There are many ways to purify our mind. One is the ultimately is emptiness, understand of shunyata. It's most effective way to do it. But before we have a fully experienced the emptiness or understanding, maybe certain understanding is also very helpful. That means they all these misdeeds intrinsically, ultimately they are also not existing. Any sin, sin, right? Your negative karma or positive karma, they have a lacking of intrinsic existence. That is very important to know as a other phenomenon same. Because some people may have a very heavy kind of feeling about, sometimes I did something wrong, so that is unforgivable. That is always there, very difficult, or that is not true too. Due to things a lack of intrinsic existence. But relatively, because we have so much depends on the all phenomenon. So before we reach really experiencing the emptiness in very stable stages, then we should respect that cause and the conditions affect us. So in this level, relative level, we also able to reduce that, purifying the mind too. So through 100 syllables, chanting of 100 syllables of Vajrasattva, there have a sadhanas or process of how you can purify body, speech, and mind by a visualization of Vajrasattva. And one important element is to just think about what we have done in the past, something good and negative, especially we're focusing on sometimes in on negative. Although many negative already changed by doing good things, but still if we remember something, then we represent all other people also have a different kind of some negative karma. So we generate our mind in order to help myself and other all sentient beings who accumulate negative karma. Then we now really sincerely to kind of purify our mind and regret our misdeeds. And it said one is rely on the awakened state of mind, awakened beings. So like Buddha, Bodhisattvas, in front of that, those already, they also had once a time have a bad karma and went through a lot. And eventually they are purified and enlightened. So in front of those worthy to respect and praise, then we say, you are the real weakness in everything. So now I'm sincerely to purify my negative actions in the past, intentionally or intentionally, this life or past many lives, whatever, anything I did myself or collectively from beginningless of time and through the body, speech and mind driven by greed or anger and ignorance and also harm myself and others and still some consequences become mature, firm forming now or future, then said now all something I promised didn't do it or something I can help or didn't help or really hurt others through body, speech and mind, these things sincerely kind of apology or regret. And then now I decided not to do bad things, even someone threatening my life or causing my life, even it causes my life. I always strive for kind of antidote means positive, good karma. Used to may have to have happened to kill some sentient beings or animals, but for food or many things. But now I dedicated to protect life and emphasize more about how you protect their environment. The used to stealing happened in past life or something. This life, I do some generate charity or good things, large or small. It's represent your kind of compassion and to do antidote of negative things. And used to maybe lacking of self-discipline, but this, I try to do the best to keep balance of myself, not harming others. And used to maybe it's too much proud, how to say, pride. So may neglect or even looking down others. But now it's a more equal, more kind of mother-like sentient being to see others. So then it's through this weather sabo shines. Moved by your kind of sincerity and motivation from the Buddha or Bodhisattvas, when you visualizing, so in front of your head, the front of your head, then there appears some light and purifying you, and your all past present or negative karmas, it's kind of washed away, like the light comes, dark shade away. Similarly, what is a kind of a, with other sentient beings, you have some karmic debt is become like because your compassion and the dedication and these actions, these are kind of the karmic debt is fully kind of seized or balanced or no more debt, even have a more the positive credit for helping them in mind and in your kind of way of thinking and actions. So these are important. You can check online, I think 100 the syllable of Vajrasattva and its practice of Vajrasattva is very popular. And the detailed process I didn't mention, but there are great details. I think some even made animation of that easy to, for practitioners to visualize that practice. So it's important to say, oh, and now I'm the path of enlightenment that is kind of refugee. I think a refugee, the words maybe not the complete, the meaning of original, like maybe some, it's like a protection. Which protection is protection? Best protection is our virtuous mind and the wisdom of understanding on reality. So we have to cultivate our fundamental base. It's not a you can say refugee to Buddha means we have to find the Buddha Shakyamuni or something like that. But it's actually not, the deeper meaning is not that. Because in Buddhist teachings, Buddha, not only Bodhisattva, Buddha Shakyamuni, but there are many, many countless Buddhas. Even in this eons, they said it's 1,002, more than 1,000 Buddhas or appear to kind of turn the view of Dharma. Of course, this is Shakyamuni Buddha is important in this particular kind of time. But actually, all Buddhas are equal, like all sentient beings are equal. And for this understanding about real thing, it's because we can say refugee is Buddha and Dharma and Sangha because they are the perfect example for us. And secondly, we can say refugee is actually, if you want to become a Buddha Shakyamuni, like, then what makes you become like that is our inner compassion and the wisdom cultivation of continue to on that path. Then eventually we can enlighten or these reach that stage. So it's said Buddha, the refugee and the bodhicitta. Bodhicitta is same. It's a refugee to bodhicitta. Maybe it's more like me. Bodhicitta means awakened mind, right? Refugee and where to and to bodhicitta. Awakened mind have two aspects. One is a relative bodhicitta and one is ultimate. Ultimate means the study of profound wisdom. And relative means practice and study of vast of compassion from aspiration to action. Even a trifling virtuous thing will become an inexhaustible result. Precede all dedications of the three times with a resolve of bodhicitta. So bodhicitta, the awakened mind, is very important. And how we day-to-day time we accumulate merit is or virtues is said through accumulation, even very tiny or small good deeds. And then through the aspiration of bodhicitta, we in the morning, first, when you open in mind, refresh your mind and open your eyes, in that time we should kind of praise for refuge and bodhicitta. Refuge means continual on journey of awakening state of path. Then you say, oh, everything today I meet or encounter with any situation, any time and location with any people or animal beings, I will kind of try to accumulate, generate compassion and accumulate virtuous deeds with the also important understanding about everything is dreamlike wisdom, understanding about that. Otherwise, we may too nervous or too kind of have agitation in our mind, although we are doing good things, but still not in very free and very free, how do you say, without the attachment like that. So then it's a understand subject, object and action is like dream with this subject also. It's like illusion object also changing, not ever forever lasting. It's not there. Between the action is like yesterday from point of today's point of view, it's like already like something dream. It's a future not yet rise also like dream. And moment of current moment is shift fading away every moment. It's like dream. So from this, we can have a more relaxed and more fundamentally free of self from any grasping. So, although the fundamental truth with the good deeds, it's a right approach to enlightenment. So it said, with this mind, with the mind of bodhicitta, although you tiny, very small things, even you think this is not something virtual or something, if you drink water or you walk or you eat something, you sleep, it's not really big in the virtue, even if we cannot call it virtue. It may be from the supporting your life, you may say it's like a virtue. But with the bodhicitta's mind, the thinking about all other sentient beings, wish them to attend enlightenment, that kind of a mind, then it's all turned to virtue, that virtuous deeds or merit won't end until you reach full enlightenment. That then it's like not really that part is end, but it become limitless. So it said, even you cannot do anything, but with this mind, your kind of virtue and merit is increasing day by day, like moment by moment. So the motivation is the first primary kind of direction drive you to lead you to the virtuous, the bodhicitta mind will lead you to enlightenment. So it said, when you dedicate, proceed all dedications to three times. It means past, present, and the future. Yourself and others' accumulation, all dedicated to sentient beings, or which you finally reach enlightenment. These attitudes are very important. And then they said, if your mind comes into harmony with this device, you will be free from all suffering in the lower realms, and in the short term, you will gain the pleasure of the higher realms of God and humans. So Karo Gongchun's suggestion is a mind training teaching. It can help us to avoid in future lives kind of fall into lower realms of existence. We will continue, even we don't really immediately enlighten this life, but we still able to gain precious human life. In human also, there are a lot of different humans. Some are very suffering, but we can get what's called eight, free of that's a limitation, not limitation. I think there is a particular words about that. With 10 qualities, special qualities, eight, I think it's a, so it said that we have to, we will continuously have a, very, positive life in future with a spiritual progress. Our physical existence is complete, and the mind is sharp. Physical body is kind of complete and functioning very good way, well. And our karmic kind of surrounding people are kind of it's a environmentally give us more chance to towards enlightenment. That is the he said, ultimately you will purify the two obscurations and have the three kayas and four wisdoms. You will achieve enlightenment that dwells in neither samsara nor nirvana. That means enlightenment is unexcelled. So from this, he said, ultimately you will purify the two obscurations. We already know two obscuration is the emotional obscurations and also analytical or wisdom aspect of obscurations. Analytical obscuration, we can say maybe means how we know or realize before we fully realize what is the obscuration for realization of what things are, at what, how you see things appear. We totally understand this. This is the Buddha's kind of, in Tibetan terms, Buddha or Sanghi, it refers to that part. It said, Sang means purifying all purifiable kind of things. And Ji means like accumulation or fully ripened every the qualities of merit and wisdoms. So these, I think, generally, is that, and then they said, and there have the three kayas and four wisdoms. That is, kaya means body, right? Although we say body, but it's not like a human body or animal body like that. It's talking about fundamental existence in very subtle level. For example, mind, different mind aspect of a subtle mind called body. The body, dharmakaya, it's like if you know complete what is shunyata or the emptiness itself, free of all contrived, these free from all fabrication or these grasping, then it's called the dharmakaya. In that is the all everything like a reality of nirvana and samsara. It's like that. It's a some people may say nirvana is the dharmakaya, but nirvana has many explanations, different aspect. And then second, the sambhogakaya. Sambhogakaya is more the appearance aspect. Before, dharmakaya is empty aspect of things and or mind of that. And the appearance aspect is called the subtle level. It, like you have a really reached first bhumi ground to understand the use very subtle level with meditation. Very helpful. Very we can say even our naked eyes only can see rough kind of image. If we use microscope very highly kind of a high quality of that, you can see something different from naked eyes. Similarly, meditation also same. Where you can deep go with shamatha and vipassana, gradually you see something different. Especially in eighth ground of bodhisattva, you see things directly different from normal people. More fabricated things, you immediately know everything is dreamlike that time. But in the first ground or something, if you use although you have a enlightened mind in certain level, but you still see same like normal human beings. But anyway, it's like appearance, part of appearance. And then nirmanakaya is a more gross level of appearance, a more gross with this gross level of Buddha's, like, although he's enlightened, but his compassion and deeds are visible and interactable to day-to-day life with all normal beings. It's like that. That is. But the Sambhogakaya, normal people cannot interact with that kind of appearance or body. Sometimes we call these Bodhisattva and Buddha lived in a pure land. It's like maybe different from the paradise, but like this level of purification, then you can meet them. And the four kayas, the fourth one, Sarvabhoomikaya, I think Sarvabhoomikaya is like defined as the aspect of enlightenment form that is distinguished with a twofold purity. He, as here said, it's like first the purity in the sense of, in the sense that it is always pure by its very nature. That means, although we are not enlightened, not yet, but we have a same like root of a purity with the same as Buddha, because it's like a muddy world, muddy water. It's like a sentient being in samsara, the existence of a sixth realm of the samsara. Muddy water, if you go down to molecule, then this mud never become part of a water, a molecule. Other minerals or this earth or dust is their own kind of a separation. Although we can see muddy water as one mixed, but in details, they're never mixed. That's why they can be purified and restore the purity of water itself. So similarly, it said our Buddha nature never mixed with the kind of or the what's it called distortion or these impure or so-called these things with these. So this is first. It's like we have to understand Buddha nature is important to have a confident. We are also able to reach enlightenment because we have the seeds. Secondly, the purity in this sense that all adventitious stain, that is the dust or stain, you know, adventitious, that means we're not really with the mind itself, have been purified. So like a cloud never really polluted the sky itself. Cloud in the sky is completely different things. So although sometimes the cloud is too thick, we don't see blue sky, but then that cloud could be blown away by wind or by certain condition. It's said that the normal sentient beings have different behaviors and even went to something very negative, but eventually they will kind of come back to the blue sky. It's that is the fourth, the kaya, savabhavika kaya. So there are different way saying two kayas, three kayas, four kayas, five kayas, and explanation. But generally it's how you subtly divide the things to understand. It's generally one direction. Same. And the main pointing is same direction. You will achieve the unexcelled the enlightenment that dwells in neither samsara nor nirvana. That means because we have gone beyond of two obscurations by two accumulations of merit, the one called the compassion, to purifying the negative emotions, and the accumulation of wisdom, purifying the lacking of real understanding or analytical or obscurations, cognitive obscurations, lacking of these can be purified by this merit and the wisdom. Then because of merit, because of compassion, we won't stuck on the nirvana. Nirvana, there are so some limited nirvana or nirvana is in certain, some level, it's like seizing the mind. Now, no more, wisdom or for normal people, it's cognition functions in that kind of nirvana exists, especially in Theravadan tradition, which they are really aiming for individual liberations. So extinguishing their kind of project mind, kind of activities of mind beyond of suffering, so-called. So itself is already beyond of six realm of existence. It's one of the enlightenment, a state of peace resulted of ceasing from cessation or cessation of all activities, total purification of suffering and its causes of suffering. And these are like Sharvaka Yana and the Pratika Buddha, which were primarily aiming for this. And then in Mahayana and these studies of Mahayana tradition, they're more looking for more nirvana because they wanted to continue to serve in sentient beings in different forms, a bird or a human or any animal or something to different capacity, even non-sentient kind of material, minerals, existence of that. It's a very highly kind of developed understanding of mind, and material is fundamentally, it's kind of, they have the same nature, then it even they can appear as a kind of a world, forming a world system to help sentient beings to go better approach to enlightenment. So that Mahayana, it's sometimes called the Buddhahood. So it's also utterly transcend both the suffering of samsara and the peace of nirvana, because it's called the non-binding nirvana, means not to stay in nirvana but gone beyond. Because of samsara, because lot of beings there to serve, so with the compassion, so they won't stay like extinguished mind state of a nirvana. At the same time, it's not like a diluted kind of a sentient beings wandering in samsara. They have a wisdom already achieved in the kind of first ground. So they are not suffered really either by the cyclic existence or something. They are not really part of that cyclic existence. They are the like moon shine in sky have reflected in thousands of rivers. It's like that moon won't suffer just falling into rivers. It appears into river, you know. It's like that. So non-binding nirvana. So by nirvana, sometimes it's called a natural nirvana. It's an inherent state of everything. Non-binding means Mahayana, this non-binding nirvana. It's gone beyond of samsara and nirvana. And nirvana with a reminder. Remainder means arhat, who is still alive. They have achieved arhat, self-liberation, but this person is kind of on the earth, still breathing and there, person. And nirvana without a remainder means when this realized person passed away, his body, physical body ceases, and then his mental kind of gone to the, what's it called, extinguished state of nirvana. So anyway, these where we are there here talking about is the good Mahayana tradition, kind of enlightened, gone beyond of samsara and nirvana because of a compassion, won't limit in nirvana because of wisdom. They won't limit or by just nirvana, samsara, cyclic existence. So then this completes the 72 exhortations written by Karak Bomchong from Zhang at Karak Tsa Monastery. Karak means I think it's a place. Karak Bomchong means, it's like a, maybe it's a self, what's about, more modest way to say, or modest, maybe modest, or, is like a self, effects in maybe saying, I'm not like a great, some meditator or something, but it's a little meditator, something like that, you know. Gomchong, it means like a little meditator. In Karak, that place, it's in Zhang, in Tibetan nowadays, autonomic region, there is a Wi means Lhasa area, Lhasa capital area. And Zhang, that is the close to Nepal, that part. Still big land, not very close, actually. You have to maybe 2 days drive in to Nepal border. But anyway, this area, And his monastery, it's Karakta, I don't know this monastery, maybe not, it still exists, maybe not exists, because in 1966 to 70 something, there are many monasteries destroyed. So some are restored, but some not. So I hope this monastery still exists. So with this, I think we're going to finish this with a good dedication towards merit accumulated with us, for dedicate to all sentient beings, wish them in all corner or time with a different existence, have a temporary happiness, and eventually they'll toward in, enlightenment, and finally, swiftly, quickly reach enlightenment. I'm going to dedicate this merit. May the lives of the glorious master be secure, and may all beings enjoy happiness and peace. May we all accumulate merit and wisdom, purifying all negative karma, and sweetly reach enlightenment. And thank you very much, and all your patience. And we also did some, a few weeks, almost month, have a break between, and you always patience and very, very dedicated. So I wish or rejoice all your good quality. Thank you very much, and looking forward to see you next time again. Thank you.